Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is a place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership in business. On today's show, this is a question and answer episode, and we are going to be taking your questions. We've actually got a bunch of your questions, and there's a lot of people that are sending in questions right now on Twitter at Chris Licurdo. And we will also try to get to as many of them as possible. If we don't get to all of them, which I don't think we're going to get to all of them, but we'll probably answer a bunch of those over on chrislicurdo.com. Sitting in here in the studio with me is our producer, Chris Mefford. You ready to do this?
Hello, I'm ready, yes. I'm excited. Yeah. Friday morning.
Woo! Super excited. What can you expect from the Entree Leadership Podcast? Plain and simple. Our goal is to bring you information that is going to change your leadership, change your business. Ways that you can interact, you can follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership, at ENTRE. Wow, there's a lot of coming in over Twitter right now as we're speaking right now. ENTRE Leadership, or at Chris Licurdo, LOCURTO. You can email us your questions at podcast@entreeleadership.com. And as always, get your daily leadership at chrislicurdo.com. Last episode, we talked to Mike Hyatt about his new book, Platform, which is stunning. It's more than just a book. It's like a manual.
Which he launched for the very first time here on the Entree Leadership
Podcast. That's right, baby. All right, so we are going to jump in. We've asked a bunch of you to send your questions in, and we've got a bunch of those. And again, was this our number one downloaded?
Yeah, it was. We were looking at what should we do, and as I went through the data and the numbers, we have some fancy programs that kind of track how many downloads and how many times things have been downloaded across the board. And the number one thing was this Q&A podcast. So as the producer, I said, hey, we should probably do another one.
that's good.
We've done one. This is our second.
This is our second Q&A podcast. All right, so let's just jump right on in.
All right, this is from Justin. I'd like to start by thanking you, Chris, and Dave Ramsey, and all the guests and everyone for making such an amazing podcast. I'm just starting to realize how important company culture is, and the Entree Leadership Podcast is very motivating. I have a couple of questions that I think many other people listening to your podcast probably have. Why don't all companies put such a large emphasis on culture? And what can a lower employee do to improve the culture?
Here's the thing. Culture is having a right culture is a must. I just spoke at an Inc. magazine event a couple of weeks back where I taught on culture can't wait. You are going to have culture. There's no doubt you're going to have culture. The question is, where's that culture going to come from? Is it going to be forced as a good culture from leadership, or is it going to happen from people bringing in bad culture from other places that they worked in? As somebody who's on a lower level in the business, as he's saying, he's like, well, what do we do down here? Well, here's the deal. The way that you influence culture, for me, if you're asking Chris Licurdo, my definition of culture is actions and attitudes. The way you treat people, the kind of attitude that you have every single day when you come into work, the way that you treat your coworkers, the way that you treat your customers, those things are going to make up your culture. You know, for here, I say it a ton of times, we have a no gossip policy. We're going to fire you if you're going to gossip. We'll warn you once and then we're going to fire you. If you're not gossiping, you don't have to worry about that. So if you will walk out and live out the culture that you want, and you will suggest that along the way to other people, and they can see that you're walking that out, then eventually you can start to grow that culture from the ground up. However, I can tell you this, it will happen 1,000 times faster if it comes top down. But if it's not coming top down, do what you know is right.
I would say that's great advice. You know, don't get involved in the gossip at work or at the water cooler. Step away from that. And I know I've talked about this before to you and probably on here, the book Lynchpin, if you're just what he calls a lower employee, we would call just one of our team members,
right,
that wasn't a leadership role, how do you influence that? And, you know, if Seth Godin's book Lynchpin talks about what is the perfect employee or team member? And oftentimes people say, well, someone who shows up on time, works hard, and doesn't create trouble. Except Seth says those aren't the people that ever get elevated. They don't get promoted. So you have to be honest and trustworthy, no gossip, and then speak the truth.
That's it. Absolutely.
In a nice way.
In a nice way.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, first I have to tell you, I just finished the Entree Leadership book. This is from Jeff. And I loved it. We do about 50% of all those things now, so it was a great read for me. Really going to try and strive this year to do another 30% and really focus on this. I bought 6 copies from my senior staff and everyone here, and we're enjoying it. Anyway, I'm wondering about reviews. How do you conduct them? And more important, the form you use to evaluate them. And I think he's meaning, he's talking about our annual checkups.
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing is that for everybody else, they do reviews. It's annual reviews. You get together once a year and you talk about the things that people have done good. You go through all the things that they haven't done good. You go through all the expectations, all that stuff. We don't do that. We have what we call the annual checkup. And the reason is we sat down years ago as a leadership council and said, we have to make sure, and we had been doing it. We've always done it this way. We spend time with our team members. We spend time in our teams, working with them. The leaders that are over, it doesn't matter where you are. Any leader is working with their team on a weekly basis, some people on a daily basis. So you're constantly growing those team members. Unfortunately, in so many other businesses, what happens is that they don't work with them. They set them up for something and they say, hey, go and do this. And they leave them alone for months. And then they come back and see how they're doing. And then if it didn't work out, then that comes up in the annual review. That's a terrible way to lead people. You need to be working with your team members on a consistent basis, growing them, working with them, making them successful. When you do this, then at the end of the year, we have our annual reviews where we literally just sit down and we go, listen, you've done a killer job. We love having you here. We love what you've done. We love having you on the team. If there's something that you've had to have worked on that was not good and you've been working on it, you could bring it up and say, hey, you know, we've talked about this. We're still working on that. That's good enough. But hey, we love having you on the team. By the way, we want to give you more money, you know, if we're giving a raise at that time. And that's it. Because really, there's no point if you're actually working with your team and in your team of rehashing stuff. Tell them how great they're doing. Tell them how much you love having them on board. If they made it another year, that means they've done better than they did last year. At least that should be the way that it is. So reward them and move on.
Very cool. Good advice. Good advice. All right, this next question is from Alicia. She says, I'm good with getting the people, but I'm too nice with the pricing.
Oh my gosh. So I'm assuming, Alicia, what you're saying is that you can do the sales process, but then they talk you down on the price. I'm assuming that's what you're saying. Here's what you have to understand. Is your product worth it? I mean, is the thing that you're selling worth the price that you're asking for? Because it sounds like your personality style is kind of maybe that high I personality, high S personality, that influencing personality, the amiable personality, where you're great with people, but then you're struggling at the close. You're allowing them to talk you down off of what you have. If your product is worth it, then why are you lowering the price? Not saying that you can't lower the price. I'm not saying that there aren't times that you're going to do something to lower the price. What I'm asking you is simply this. If your product is worth it, then tell them how it's worth it. So if I'm saying to you, Mefford, hey, I want to sell you this bottle of water for $5. And you're like,
oh, that's awesome. That's a deal.
Done. Like, sold.
You know what? I don't like that. I'll buy it for $3.
Well, here's the deal. This water specifically is ionized and it's stabilized for the negative ions. And it's got ultra cellular hydration. Therefore, it's worth $5. You're still not going to buy, are you? That was the worst sales pitch ever, right?
It was
there
good on water. The, on the hey, you know, I will throw in that when I have my business, I think that sometimes people look at it in the opposite way. So they feel like they're too nice with their pricing because essentially what she's saying is if I'm not nice, they won't do their work with me. They won't let them hire me. And one of the more freeing things I discovered was when I stood firm in my price, one, I didn't have to feel like people were walking away in a bad way. I stood firm. I stood on principle. This is what I'm worth. And two, I also found more people just said, oh, okay. I was trying.
Yeah.
I was trying.
I expect you to try. I hope that you're going to try. Try and do it. When people come in and try as I'm hiring somebody and they ask for more money than I'm willing to pay them, I expect that you do that. I don't have a problem with that. But I'm going to stick where I need to stick. I know what I'm willing to pay and I know what I'm willing to do as far as, you know, what you're going to pay me as far as that job. When you do that, just like you said, people are going to go, absolutely.
And it's freeing. It was the opposite. I didn't see the conflict because people, I just knew exactly where I was going to stand. And so take it or leave it.
Absolutely.
I didn't have to have that conflict.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got some coming in on Twitter. So should we take one of those right now?
Yeah. Might as well.
I mean, heck.
We're live right now in the studio.
I mean, they are buzzing my cell phone right now. Let's see. We have got one coming in from Grant and Chris. It says this: therapy counseling practice. How much money do I keep as retained earnings after paying self? Grant and Chris, the way you want to look at retained earnings is simple. You want to look at it like an emergency fund. You need to have about 6 months worth of annual expenses. So like if we're teaching somebody on the Financial Peace University principles, we're going to say, hey, have 36 months worth of your household expenses. Same kind of concept with your business. You want to look at having 6 months of annual expenses. Now, keep in mind, annual expenses are the expenses that you need to keep the doors open. Keep your staff there. Keep the lights on. Keep the building, if you're renting, whatever, leasing. Those are the expenses. Sometimes this can sound confusing, and I had two gals that run a concrete company. They're like, dude, that would be millions of dollars. I'm like, seriously? And they're like, well, yeah, we have upcoming jobs. I'm like, no. We're not talking about future stuff. We're talking about as if the company, you lost all business, what would it take to keep the doors open for 6 months? So that answers that question. You need about 6 months worth of annual expenses.
This is from Scrop. Last name, I don't know, that's Mark. A middle name or his hipster name.
This is from Mark.
And this is interesting. It says, Chris, what are the best ways to stay motivated in a job you don't care for?
And Scrop is his Twitter handle. That's what it came in over on the Twitter. But the best ways to stay motivated in a job that you don't want to be in. I mean, come on. Every single one of us has been there. I know what. I brought you from being in like 10 different positions that you hated. And then
about gosh. I spent years in this position, Mark. I could just talk to you, Scrop.
Scrop. Here's the thing. You've got to understand that you're going to be at that job anyways. And if you're a believer, if you're a Christian, then you've got to do your work as unto the Lord. So you want to do it in a way that's pleasing to God. Let's say that you're not. How do you stay motivated? You obviously don't like the position. You've got to find something in that job, in that position. You can't wait for leadership to come along and motivate you. That's why there's so many people that put in their job descriptions looking for somebody who's self-motivated. You know why they're looking for somebody self-motivated? Because they don't know how to motivate somebody. And so they're hoping that somebody comes in and they're already motivated in this process. You've got to take a look at the thing that you're doing every day and find value. How are you doing something that's changing lives? How are you doing something that is, and people say, well, gosh, I pour concrete. Really? Okay, where? Well, I do people's driveways and their patios and all that kind of stuff. How can I find anything exciting about that? Well, what happens when that family who's working hard themselves come home and on a weekend, a vacation weekend or a holiday weekend or something like that, they get to barbecue out on that patio. They get to experience life on that patio. They get to go out there and sit out there in the afternoon or in the evening with their children and teach them stuff, whatever it is. When you realize that you're not just pouring concrete, you're actually creating life for somebody else, then it matters. Even if you don't want to stay in that industry and you're looking for something else, that's where my focus is going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Thank you.
It was great.
Thank you.
All right. This one here is from Zachary. Zachary asks, Chris, how do I move from being a programmer to a leader? And I think the question here is, how do I move from being a peer?
A team member.
To the leader of this group.
This is something I actually get asked all the time. I've got on the blog, if you go to chrislicurdo.com and type in new leader, you can find I've answered this. Because it is something that people always want to know. I am in a situation where I'm a team member and somebody has put me in leadership. Most like the people who don't ask this question is the person who wants to take leadership, which is hilarious because that person probably needs it more than anybody. When you are going from a team member role into a leadership role, there is one thing that you've got to understand. Leadership equals influence, plain and simple. Plain and simple. If you cannot influence your team, forget about it. You are not going to be leading your team. In fact, something I love to say at Entree Leadership is, if you want to know the proper definition of a team leader, turn around. If nobody's following you, then you're not leading anybody. People don't follow dictators. What they do is they do the tasks that are dictated to them, and they will do them about half the productivity. But people follow leaders. So you have to be influential. You have to make sure the next thing is that you are doing everything you can to make your team member successful. Whatever it takes to get into their business, into their lives, for that 8 hours that they're working for you, get in there and make your team member successful. As you do that, they become successful. You become successful. It's a great leadership, great team member relationship.
I think of that Braveheart clip that we show all the time. If you would just lead them, they would follow you.
Of course, I think we put a little bit more emphasis on that.
Than he did.
But
yeah, no, it was great. We love Braveheart.
Clip, yeah.
We use like Tim Braveheart clips in Entree Leadership.
Pretty much, you see the whole movie through Entree Leadership. Yes.
So,
all right. So let's jump to the Twitter questions again. We've got a question from Mark Sieverkopf. Mark, actually, how do I say your last name? Sieverkopf? Krop?
I would just call him Mark.
Podcast question. How do you bring up concerns to management in a low-trust culture where your opinion isn't respected? I can't tell you how many times I get that question in different forms and fashion. And Mark, here's the deal. Where there is low trust, the only way that you can lead people, and leading does not mean top-down, you can lead people from any direction. The only way that you could lead people is if you have influence. If you're able to influence your team, if you're able to influence leadership, then you can bring up stuff. Then you can bring up concerns to management. The problem is when it's in a low trust area, if they don't trust you, if you don't trust them, if there's not trust going on in the building, only the influencers are going to get anything across. So the only other option at this point is asking management to sit down with the team. Now, don't be gossiping. Don't be talking to people around. That's probably the reason why there is low trust. Gossip is not going to help out the situation. But if you can get to leadership and say, hey, how about we just take a poll on this situation? Then maybe you can get them to start listening. But until there's influence, unfortunately, they're not going to listen. What you got?
This is from Mark. My wife and I run a business in Tampa, and we really enjoy your podcast. In fact, we have all our team members listening to them as well.
Sweet.
As reading the Entree Leadership book, and they just attended Entree Leadership one day in Orlando.
Genius.
Cool. I was there. Yeah. They saw you were there.
I was there.
One of the things that we have implemented this year for our whole team is for all of us to read a book each month and then to talk about it as a group at our monthly team meeting. Selecting the first few books have been easy because we used a list from the guy named Dave Ramsey that I think we all know. But we were trying to determine what books to select for the remaining months of this year. I see a lot of great books out there, but many of them are aimed toward managers, owners, etc. We're looking for books that are more suitable for our whole team. If this helps with recommendations, most of the people in our company are all salespeople.
Here's what I have found doing the same thing. Taking my team through books. You don't have to just look at business books. That's the common mistake that people make as they go through this process. They think, oh, I've got to only do business books. You don't. This is the third, Mike's going to love us because this is the third time we've mentioned it here today, but a book like Platform from Mike Hyatt, look at marketing books. Your salespeople, crud, go out there and find incredible marketing books from salespeople.
John Acuff and right now, we're having breakfast once a week. We're doing this new book. It's called Imagine How Creativity Works.
Okay.
And it's great.
Fantastic.
It's not focused on business, but it's just how to become more creative.
Yeah. So look for things like that. Books on marketing, books on creativity. A great book is Wild at Heart, where just kind of explains guys, take your men and your women through this at the same time because it kind of explains how God wired men together. And some people are going, oh, well, women don't want to sit through that. Oh, yes, they will. Trust me. It gives them a great perspective. A great book by Bob Goff is Love Does. It doesn't have to be something specific to your business. It can be something that you want to grow your team with. So I would focus heavily on that. All right, let's jump to another Twitter question right now. We've got a question from Charles on Twitter. Chris, why do you think so many people are reluctant to join the social media revolution? Is it because they think it won't last, or the technology gap, or something else entirely? That's a great question, Charles. Here's the deal. I believe that the reason why people don't actually join the social media revolution is simple. They don't understand it. They don't know enough about it. They are worried that they're going to get into something and really it's not worth the time. And all these kids that are doing all this Twitter and all that, it's not worth the time. Oh my gosh, that is so incredibly wrong. Like we've talked about with Mike Hyatt's book, Platform, social media is the direction things are going. If you don't understand this, go to my blog, type in social media revolution. You'll see a video that is going to blow your mind. It is moving so rapidly fast that traditional media, traditional marketing is actually falling away. And the reason why is when you go put up a billboard, you're putting up a billboard that's touching a lot of people that may not even know who you are, not be part of your tribe, might not even have anything to do with what you're doing. You spent a lot of money doing so. When you go the social media route, when you're doing Twitter and you start building a brand, when you start bringing people in that want to know more about you, that want to see behind the scenes, when you do Facebook and you're bringing on people there, when you do even Pinterest, which is taking off like crazy right now, when you find these different ways, still don't know Google Plus though. Nobody, I don't think anybody really understands Google Plus. We don't really know why they did that. Anyways, but if you take a look at Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, stuff like that, you start building a tribe. You start bringing people in to say, oh my gosh, I want to know the insides of this company. I want to know the inside, you know, what's the behind the scenes of this person, whatever it is. As you do that, you create this tribe. Well, who would you rather market to? The person that's already sold out, the person that's already bought in, or would you rather spend a lot of money, and you can do that for free, by the way, or would you rather spend a lot of money trying the traditional routes, hoping that you bring people your direction who really still don't know anything about you? Now, am I saying all traditional media is no good? No, not at all. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is you've got to understand that more than not, moving in the direction of doing a blog, I have trusted followers that comment like crazy all the time. We've created a community there. And because of that, they believe in my product, which is me. They believe in what I'm doing. Studies show that 90% of people will trust peer recommendations online. Only 14% trust advertising. So you make the decision. Which one would you rather do? I'm going to move in the social media vein. And this one is in from Twitter as well. This is from Keisha. I am in a season of expansion. I'm trying to transition my business into being more passive income than working income, which will allow me to begin opening additional locations. What advice would you offer when hiring your first manager who will oversee a location? Keisha, that is, again, this is a phenomenal question. The reason why is simple. It's not about hiring talent. It's not about hiring somebody with a pedigree. You are going to naturally look that way, which most people do. You need to hire somebody who is completely sold out for being a part of your business. Somebody who is completely sold out for running one of those locations, not just somebody who says that they can do it. As a matter of fact, I always talk about this with my personal assistant whenever I would have her in one of my interview sessions. Whenever I would explain a job, somebody would ask me about the job and I would explain it and they would say, I can do that. Immediately in my head, and unfortunately it came out at least once or twice, immediately what I would say is, no, you can't. No, you can't. You can't do this. I'm not going to hire you for this job. And the reason is I don't want somebody who can do this job. I want somebody who goes, oh my gosh, please let me be a part of this. I want somebody who is so on fire and so excited to do this job that they're like, dude, what will it take? What else do you need to hear from me? What else can I do? You know, can I drag my parents down here and have them tell you how great I am? Whatever it is, my fifth grade reading teacher, I'll do anything, but I want to be a part of this. Now, some of you out there are going, dude, you're on something because people don't do that. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. You can find the right person. You can't find the right person when you do three interviews, you don't ask any questions, and you tell them all about the job. Then you're not going to find that person. How do you find the right person? You find the right person by going through a lengthy process of discussing and understanding the individual themselves, asking them questions, spending more time listening than talking. When you do that, you get people like Aaron West. I brought on Aaron West, gosh, I think it's been about 6 years now. I brought him on as one of our lead AV coordinator. And when he came on board and I showed him what we were doing, I actually took him to one of our arenas in Charleston and I showed him what we were doing. His eyes bugged out of his head and he's like, oh my gosh, I love this stuff. We're actually walking through the arena and he's going, oh, you're using the KR375 over there. That's awesome. I've used that before. And I'm like, oh, of course we are. And I'm looking back at, you know, our other AV guys going, what in the world is that? Because I don't even have a clue. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody who's on fire, not just somebody who has the pedigree or the talents of doing the job.
All right. This one's from Josh. Do you have an internal goal for how quickly an employee should pay for themselves?
Day one? Is day one too, wait, is that too soon?
Should I change that? I meant team member. If you're listening to this, I didn't say the word employee.
We don't say employee around here. My gosh, that's very difficult because there's so many different roles that you would be asking this question on. If it's a team member who's selling a very high-end ticket, well, gosh, it might take them 6 months to fill a pipeline. I don't think that they're asking about salespeople, but let's just say that they are. It could be anywhere from 1, 2, 3 months to 6 months, depending upon what the ticket is, depending upon how full the pipeline is. Is it a brand spanking new position where they have no clue and they're really digging this thing out on their own? If it's an admin role, it's actually slightly easier to define. If I'm hiring somebody in an administrative role to take the junk off of me, that the tasks that I'm doing every day, well, technically, they actually pay for themselves as soon as I get out and start doing things to create more income. So it's a great question. It's an interesting question, but it all depends on specifically the role and what they're doing.
Yeah, and here, though, we even try and burst at the seams before we bring on a new team member.
Yeah.
We try and do forecasting, but...
Yeah, and sometimes, and we've been very clear to say that sometimes we've waited too long. We've gone too far. So you've got to have somebody in the seat when you need them. The point is, when you're looking to bring somebody on, bring them in at the point that you can go and do something else and create more income, or another team member can, or you have something that, like in a sales position, they can take over right away and start creating some income.
Admit it. Before you brought me on, you'd waited way too long.
I waited way too long.
Years.
Dude. Oh my gosh. It was crazy.
It would have changed your life earlier.
What was your name again?
Chris.
Oh. Right.
This is from Beth. Chris, I have a team of 90 associates. You're going to love this question, Chris. Who I lead. The team is very diverse with ages from mid-20s to the mid-60s. I am struggling on how to manage the issue of the associates using their iPhones, iPads, Kindles at work, and in a workstation during what I would consider work hours. Example, I have walked through the department and seen team members reading their Kindles, playing Word with friends on their iPhones, posting messages on Facebook about the work or fellow team members, and watching a movie on their iPads.
You got to be kidding me. I'm going to say, Beth, I'm probably going to be firing some people. I appreciate the way that she's put this question together of saying, how do I work with, because they're younger, and how do I, listen, you straight up, first thing you need to be doing is you need to be consistently telling people, listen, we are paying you. I'm paying you to do a job. As I walk through and I see people playing Friends with Friends,
Words with Friends,
watching movies, reading Kindles, folks, I will fire you. You're stealing from me. You're stealing from my money. The money that I'm paying you to do the job that you're supposed to be doing, you're stealing. The problem is that they're not in a culture where anybody is telling them that's a bad thing. That is what you need to create. Anytime you need to adjust culture, anytime you need something specific in your culture, you have to teach it. And so one of those things is going to be coming along and saying, folks, we don't do this. We just don't. That may be acceptable at other companies, and that may be acceptable because other people don't care, but we have lives to change. We have a job to do. And anytime you're in here on your phone watching a movie, you're stealing from me. That's ridiculous. And you may have to set some examples on this to make sure that people understand that you're serious. And I would also say bad hires.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Bad hires. There's a few things that are lacking here. There's no vision, or at least there's not a strong enough vision that they feel like they are poured in towards something that they can work 8 hours and be so fulfilled and so satisfied that they don't have to play Words with Friends, or they don't have to watch movies or read Kindles. And here's the other, people are going to say, oh, but what if they were doing it on their lunchtime? Leave. Go somewhere else. Take your Kindle, go somewhere else away from your desk on your lunch hour so that you can do that there. Don't be sitting at your desk doing this. It's a bad morale. You know, it just rips morale out from other people that are doing things right. So lack of vision, they need to have a vision. Lack of work that matters, they need to know that they're doing something that's changing lives somehow. And bad culture. Those are the three things that I'm going to focus on immediately. And I'm pushing this. They need to understand that they are stealing from your time that you're paying them. How would they like it if all of a sudden they got their paycheck and you just decided to dock them 5 hours worth of work? I mean, they'd lose their minds. Wait a minute. How come I don't have this money? Well, because you decided to take 5 hours away from me. I took 5 hours away from you. So make sure that you're teaching the culture that you want. As you do that, then you will, and teaching that you're doing work that matters. As you do that, then you will get people who are on fire and work hard for what you're doing.
You know, it's gone through my mind. Is the movie Boiler Room? Is that the one with Alec Baldwin where he goes in and he like rains fire down on all the sales guys all at once?
I don't think it's Alec Baldwin, but I know which movie you're talking about.
But
It's really crass. So if you're going to go Google that or watch that,
that is not a suggestion. That's not a suggestion. Opinions shared on movies during the Entree Leadership Podcast are not necessarily in
the Lampa organization.
Well, folks, we hope that helped you out. We're going to take a bunch of these other questions that we did not answer and answer those over on chrislocurto.com. So make sure that you step on over there to do that. Coming up next Tuesday at 9 a.m. Central, we'll be hosting another Entree Leadership Live Chat. That has been going crazy. People have absolutely loved that. So make sure that you tune in for that. Go on over to DaveRamsey.com/, because I always say / Entree Leadership next Tuesday to join in on the discussion. Reminders, follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership, at Chris Locurto. Email us your questions at over to podcast@entreeleadership.com every single day for free, good, strong leadership. Go to chrislocurto.com. Also, head on over to the business section of DaveRamsey.com and sign up for the monthly newsletter. It is free. Once again, I need to give thanks to the people who make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our producer. Colin Fatke, our audio engineer. Becky Powell, our...
non-Kindle reading.
Not reading her Kindle at work. Queen of question and answer. And, of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, take this information, change your life, change your leadership, and change your business. Thanks again, and we look forward to you joining us on another Entree Leadership Podcast.
Join me, John Acuff, on September 21st and 22nd for the Quitter Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, brought to you by Dave Ramsey. Based on my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Quitter, this exciting two-day event will help you figure out what your dreams and passions really are. Beat the three biggest fears that keep you from pursuing your dream. Recognize the six signs that it's time for you to jump, and much more. The last Quitter Conference sold out. Don't miss your chance to go to this one. Sign up today and join me and hundreds of other people chasing their dream at QuitterConference.com.
Folks, right now couldn't be a better time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, for the one-day event based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. At Entree Leadership One Day, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a business. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com or call 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223.
Running a business is not for wimps. If you lead people on a daily basis, you know how tough it is. You want your team to enjoy coming to work every day with the same level of passion you have. How can you do that? We've got three ways. John Acuff, Chris Hogan, and Chris Locurto. These speakers travel the country inspiring business audiences, both large and small. They're not only endorsed by Dave Ramsey, they're on his team. They live and breathe Entree Leadership. They get it. And they know how to get it across to your people in their own unique styles. They'll share practical, proven, easy-to-understand principles that will impact how your team sees their work, and more importantly, how they see themselves. This is real-life stuff straight from the trenches. Dave's company has won Best Place to Work in Nashville 5 times in a row for a reason. You can win, too, but you have to be intentional about it. Call our speakers group to schedule John Acuff, Chris Hogan, or Chris Locurto today. Call 888-284-2488. That's 888-284-2488 or online at DaveRamsey.com/speakers.